Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, this is episode 269. I am Nick Morawski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. We do this live every Sunday night, believe it or not, on our YouTube channel. Jump in the comments. Bring us all your tired and frustrated. Bring any positive stuff you might have. Believe it or not, I think we've got a few things we can discuss. Just a few here. The audio available absolutely everywhere. We appreciate this so much. You guys fueling this podcast. What a year so far. What a team. What an organization. Can it get any worse? I say yes, but I'm scared to even think about that. With me, as always, my best friend, diehard Sox fan, Pat Hester. Hello, sir.
Hey, dude, you know what we could talk about? You and I were in our pre-show meeting here. We talked about laying down mulch. We could take the next hour.
We were just literally.
I've got 8 yards mulch Showing up tomorrow morning. Anybody that wants to come over and help me spread some mulch, fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. It may be more entertaining for us to talk about spreading mulch and doing lawn work than talking about this team, specifically the offense, which. Couple runs this weekend, only got shut out once. I guess that's the positive.
Yeah. I want to welcome LA, Tyler, John, Drew. Something that Tyler brought up, we are going to get to here at the beginning of this episode. But our Chicago White Sox, as we record here on Sunday night, April 21st, 3-18. You've heard about it, just worst start in history, 120 plus years of White Sox baseball history. We're on pace for just the worst team ever in the history of Major League Baseball. You know the offensive numbers. They are absolutely awful. Sox are 12.5 games back. 12.5 games back.
Any other division? Good thing we're in the Central, Nick. Any other division, we'd be 29 games back by now.
Exactly. It's only 12.5 here with this very forgiving AL Central. And the Sox run differential, minus 71. That is by far the worst in all of baseball. Miles from the Rockies and from the Oakland Athletics, if you're worried about that kind of stuff. So Sox were swept by the Philadelphia Phillies in Philly. You know, Pat, as I was watching this series, and I've been to Philly to see the Sox play the Phillies years ago, and they're my kind of people. I enjoyed, chopping it up with Philadelphia fans. They got an interesting structure. They've got, their baseball stadium, I think basketball and hockey, or maybe it's hockey and football. I don't know. They've got like three stadiums right around. And then this one big area that's got restaurants and bars. And it's crazy. Traffic is a nightmare. A lot of public transportation, a lot of taking the train, walking over, but Sox didn't fare too well when I was there, but I enjoyed my time, ate well, had some fun with Philly fans. Philly fans are like, just get away from us, just like swatting the Sox away, like a bothersome bee or insect or something at this point. They're in the NL East. That's a real division, and the Phillies are a real team, and they are a team, Pat. As I looked at all these names, these guys were supposed to be in White Sox uniforms. Mm-hmm. These guys were supposed to be playing for the Sox. There was rumors galore about all these different guys pitching, offense. How did you feel watching this team?
I'd say thank God that I had a busy schedule, Nick, and I don't have to sit down and watch every inning and every pitch. You're right, though, when you're talking about the Phillies are the team that we yearn to have. It was, whoever you want to start with, whether it's Bryce Harper, let's start there.
Sure.
You and I had going way back several years ago, talking about the possibility of Bryce Harper being a Chicago White Sox. And it was a, I don't know if it was a great possibility, but they were talking to him anyway. And there was a time, believe it or not, that it seemed like the Sox were interested in paying a high price for a high profile athlete. And to me, you know, going back on that time, it would have been like, well, you know, you've got Bryce Harper bringing into a group that's not winning right now. But I was all about accelerating the timeline. I was all about, you know, being able to put a superstar on the map on the South side that you can market around. And if you think about it, Nick, you know, again, who knows what would have happened, right? We can just play this what if game. But you look back and you think, wow, if you would have signed a Bryce Harper, would have his presence, his star power, and the way he seemingly from the outside looking in can command the clubhouse and garner the respect of his teammates, seemingly, would you have had the clubhouse issues that you've had over the past several years if you had a guy like Bryce Harper? Would you have had to lean on a guy like Jose Abreu to lead as a silent leader? No, you probably could have just let him mash and play first base for you. You probably would have been able to let a Tim Anderson be Tim Anderson and not have to be the guy, how Tim goes, we go type of guy. It obviously was too much pressure for him. You would have had a guy that shined in the moments when you need to shine the most in the playoffs and come up big and step up big in situations. So I'm not saying that, you know, the Sox would have won a playoff series with a Bryce Harper back in 2020 or 2021. I don't really know that. I can't say that that would be true. Bryce has also had, you know, several health issues. You know, he would have fit right in. But I'll tell you what, you look across the field this weekend and you go, man, that's the one guy that I coveted the most out of all the guys. You could say Kyle Schwarber too. You know, Kyle, we could have gotten him for really a song for what he's worth. Now, I know, obviously, the batting average is never going to be there. There's always going to be a lot of swing and miss. But, dear Lord, we've been looking for left-handed power for a long time, and it was right there across town for you if you just wanted to pay a little bit of money to entertain the thought of bringing him in. But you get rid of your multitude of other DHs that you had, which would have been, you know, the Sox don't think that far in advance and, you know, and able to, you know, make shrewd enough moves to bring in what you need. Hence why we haven't had a right fielder since Jermaine Dye. So yes, the Zach Wheeler thing, you know, the whole, how that all went down with, his wife wanting to go to Philly and, you know, again, I'm married. You're married. Usually you listen to your wife, you know, right? You just do usually what your wife says and you're going to have a happy life. So I don't blame him for that. It's where his family wanted to be, whatever. But that was a possibility. I could go on and on. Nick, yeah, honestly,
you but, can with this team.
But I just, I again go back to Bryce Harper as the one that I think history could have been a lot different had he been on the South side.
Hello to Sydney and Sean and Howard and Keith. Greg, thank you so much for joining us here and so many others live here on Sunday night jumping in. Appreciate the comments. And I agree with you, Pat. You know, you talk about culture or change of chemistry or this, that, and the other. Would you have these problems with Bryce Harper? You got a feeling if you landed Bryce Harper and you played his game and not the Jerry game and you really went after him, and he was in the building, conversations were being had with Kenny, and you got him and you landed him, don't you think you wouldn't stop there? It's like you break the seal, right? You're like, okay, you know, it's like we spent, well, why not continue? And don't you think there'd be players and free agents and folks that are looking to sign saying, what's happening over there on the South side? They just landed Bryce Harper. Yeah, I'd like to go play over there, you know? And I think they're, you know, it's easier said than done, but I think that tends to happen a little bit. You know, when you see what a team and organization is doing and superstars start talking, it doesn't always happen, but I think we would have seen some positive effect. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. I mean, but this comes up every time, you know, I see the Phillies or I see a bit of, you know, Bryce Harper highlights and that kind of thing. I mean, the merchandise would have been through the roof. Tickets would have been through the roof to land him at that time. You think about it this past weekend here and, you know, they're just built differently. You know, the Sox are built a certain way that we've discussed over the last several weeks. And if you've watched any ounce of baseball, you realize that, not only are the sacks built differently, you know, on the cheap, trying to really on the margins, but they were supposed to be built with defense in mind. And the things that they were supposed to be doing, the things that might not have generated a lot of wins, but we might have saw different types of games, you know, tough games. You know, it's like we almost had that game. You know, we just got beat by better talent. That was what we were kind of looking for, me and you, as we chopped this up before the season started. I mean, you could look at today. You could look at Saturday. Oh, my goodness. Game two. Gavin Sheets and Lenin Sosa running into each other. You know, Gavin Sheets, I think his glove goes flying off. Earlier in the week, you had Dominic Fletcher just kind of falling down twice in center field. I don't know what Andrew Benintendi is doing at all at the plate. I don't know what he's doing out in left field. That was an embarrassment. So it's becoming an embarrassment, Pat, is because when you say you're going to do all these different things, we're going to fundamentals and, you know, we're going to get back to, you know, defense and playing the game the right way with the right type of guys. And I don't know if that was Getz's idea, Pedro's, I don't know. This is what they came up with of, you know, we're not going to tell them we're not going to spend money. We're going to tell them we're going to build these types of this type of team. That should excite the fan base. Right. And you don't even do that. You can't even deliver on that. There's zero accountability. You get to this 3-18 where it's, I mean, there isn't a good 3-18. You know, you get to just a really embarrassing 3-18, the doormat in all of baseball.
Yeah, it's really become a really sad joke. And you would think, you know, at 3-18, because there was some discussion about it. I think our buddy Herb was putting it out there this past weekend on Twitter X and saying, you know, what is the use of having Pedro Grifol? I think that was kind of what the genesis of his tweet was. And I had said for a while now, it doesn't really matter what the record is. Pedro is not going anywhere. There's no reason to get rid of him. The team isn't getting better without him. But now I think it's getting into this scary territory of not just the what the record is, but how they're playing to get to that record. And you have to think, you know, as a general manager, I went out there and spoke to whoever would listen and said, we're going to be a smarter baseball team. We're going to do exactly what you were just saying. And it's not being executed on the field. And regardless of the guys that are out hurt, there was those guys were not, you know, playing all nine positions at the same time. And you've only got two of them that really played defensively anyway. So I don't know, Nick. It's really starting to look bad.
There's no reason to keep Pedro Grifol around anymore. I can't buy into, me personally, I can't buy into the attitude of, well, nothing will really change. You know, it might feel good for a few days, but there's really going to be no change. How do you know that?
Yeah.
How do you know that? He's not delivering on anything. Okay. He, first time manager, completely out of his mind, had no idea what was going on or how to get things back on track. Tried to sell us a bunch of different stuff, lip service this offseason with his buddy Chris Getz. Okay, all right, last year was in the past. You're going to get the type of team you think you need to play the baseball you think you can to get this White Sox organization to the top of the AL Central, the weak AL Central. You can't even do that. There's zero accountability. The rosters are a mess. Yes, he's dealt with some injuries. Yes, he's dealt with guys underperforming. But you tell me, again, if you truly believe at all that Pedro Grifol is not part of the future, if there's an ounce, okay, now, again, I'm talking about a serious organization, all right, and the Sox, I'm sorry, the fact that Pedro Grifol is still employed, the Sox are not a serious organization in my mind, okay? But if a serious organization says, you know what, Pedro's not even part of our future, like, he's a guy we hired and it hasn't worked out. I don't think he's the right person moving forward. Even if there's going to be we're not going to see the wins uptick or anything. It doesn't necessarily matter about that. It's do you have the person you want moving forward? Okay. That can help develop these guys. If the answer is no, then you cut bait immediately. and you shift Montoya into the managerial spot, and then you try to figure it out. I'm not saying things are going to be all of a sudden better, but you get rid of some dead weight. You get rid of somebody, and you might even build some fan trust. It's a small step, a very small step, I think, into a serious direction. Okay, but I can't subscribe to the, nothing's going to change. Why would you move him? How do you know nothing's going to change? You know, maybe his message just cannot resonate with these players. Maybe it is found out that he is not managerial material.
Yeah. And I think it was very telling, and maybe this happens. And this was this past week, right? We didn't have a chance to talk about this with the, I think it was Fegan who put it out, the pictures of the schedule for the week, for the day. Right. Yeah. And it says stretching optional and batting practice optional and this and that optional. Your infield is optional. I don't mean to be a meatball here, and maybe other teams do it exactly the same way. I can't give a team that's won at the time, I think two games when that came out, maybe it was three by that time, that isn't hitting the ball and can't field, you know, anything.
Can't hit cutoff guys, can't throw.
You're telling me you're going to give them options on what they can work on and when they can show up and be available? That's to me is a fireable offense.
I mean, some of those hours were pretty goofy. I mean, you know, you're talking about stretching like three and a half hours before game time. Okay. Even if it's maybe optional in your mind, the optics of it were so bad. I mean, you're a 2-win team, a 3-win team. You're struggling at all fundamentals. And to just have the word optional next to some of those things in public, where it can be seen by, you know, beat reporters, that is not a good idea. I just would have removed that word optional and kept that, you know, behind closed doors, because, you know, fans see that, like, you know, you and I and everybody else that's dedicated to this team, and foaming at the mouth. That's insane.
I could see if the infield work, maybe not doing that every day, but the stretching piece, especially with the team that's had so many soft tissue issues. You can't say, no, you don't need to stretch today. You'll be fine. I'm sure you'll be fine today. You can't get hurt again running to first. That will never happen. So just don't worry about stretching. And if who knows, maybe the players do pick up on the option and they do all the work and they take it upon themselves. But man, what is the direction and what does that say? That you have to, you take on the identity of your leadership. And for most teams do anyway. And unfortunately, this team has taken on the identity of a loser, of a complete loser. And I don't mean to be harsh on him, but he provides nothing. There's no reason to keep him around. And regardless of the fact, if you just move over the bench coach and slide him on down the line, you can't continue to go on in this direction. It may even provide a spark to the guys on the team, like a breath of fresh air. Again, not saying it's going to equate to a bunch of wins and rattle off 15.
And I think Phil might have said it in the chat here, and I think I tried to post the comment. I think this is what he was getting at. But you might even save Pedro. It's like, buddy, you might never get another MLB job if this continues throughout the season. We're protecting you just for your professional career. You know, because you clearly can't get this going. If you want to be in baseball again and even sniff a managerial job, we're just trying to save you here, man. Like, let's just stop this and let's cut bait.
So, I mean, after that, then we're going into an off season, right? Where you're going to be looking for a manager. And I can't believe we're already, it's April, and we're projecting out what we're going to do in October and looking for a manager. What kind of faith do you have that this organization will actually go on a managerial search and actually interview people?
Well, they did last time, apparently. They went on a managerial search, and it was a big deal. They hired somebody outside of the organization, and we find out that, you know, Chris Getz had a lot to do with it, who was in the organization. And, you know, that type of, like, I don't want to call it nepotism, but that insular behavior of like, well, I'm going to go with this guy who's never managed before, but Chris Getz and his track record and everything. We're going to go off of that. That's all goofy to me. That the fact that they stick together and they go hand in hand, that's a problem. So I don't know moving forward. I don't have a lot of faith. I don't have a lot of faith in what this organization, is about to embark on, can do. It just stinks. It does not pass the smell test.
Let me ask you this. Speaking of stinking and smell test, at what point does Getz have to look at himself and go, man, I've got to preserve my own career here. I can't let this guy stink beyond me that much longer, because the longer I keep this guy around, man, the longer he and I are tied at the hip. At some point, I've got to sever it and again, try something different. Right.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if Getz is really got this blessing from Jerry, which, Jerry, boy, he anointed him and, just a love letter pretty much to Getz when Getz was hired. And I'm like, really, that Chris Getz? But anyway, Jerry really impressed / loved how cheap he was able to get Getz and too lazy to go anywhere else to find his GM. So he promoted Getz. If Getz goes to Jerry and say, look, no way. I can't be tied to this guy anymore. I feel bad for him, but we got to just cut him loose. I think that's what it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So Getz can try to find, a winner or somebody in eventually where he looks good.
Yeah. So Gordon Beckham, next Sox manager.
I said, why not Gavin Sheets? He's the only guy doing anything offensively, player manager.
You love the concept. You've brought up player manager more than anybody in the history of.
I love the idea of player managers. If we don't give managers a lot of credit, and we're like, why do we even have managers? What's the point of managers? Then just bring back the player manager. Somebody that maybe doesn't have to think so much. It could be a DH like Sheets. He needs to stay out of right field, or else Sosa's going to just steamroll him. Sosa can't anymore because he's been demoted, but somebody is going to run into him.
Well, we've tried games without having a first base coach. We might as well try have a player manager.
I love the concept. This is, speaking of our managers, our current manager, fearless leader, Pedro Grifol, who is obsessed, folks, with getting this thing right. This is what Pedro had to say after the Sox were swept out of Philly. It's going to turn, Grifol said, but I'm not going to sit here and feel sorry for ourselves or myself. All I can do is learn from what's happened, teach, continue to have an environment in here where guys can perform and feel free to perform as opposed to creating an environment of pressure. So
feel free to perform, guys, whenever you'd like to.
I just want everybody to know that this is an open room. This is a trustful room. Feel free whenever you'd like to start performing. Know that that's open. It's an open idea. I'm not putting any deadlines or any pressure on you. Whenever your body feels like it, whenever your skills feel like it, go ahead, open them up and let's start performing. This is a trusted environment.
Dude, it's not, the message isn't resonating. You can't keep going. The more he speaks, the worse I feel. Like inside, like my insides want to be on my outsides every time I hear him.
Well,
speak.
We still have the Pedro quotes of the week later.
That wasn't the quote of the week. No, I thought maybe we were done with the show already.
No, that was just his little, his knowledge after the Sox were pretty much embarrassed. But there's hope, maybe, Pat.
Tell me,
there's hope.
Please sell me some hope. I've been in sales for 18 years, Nick. I hope I'm going to be critiquing your sales pitch here to me on hope.
Two words,
mm-hmm.
Danny Mendick.
All right. Well, give me, okay. So now we're here. You've presented your product to me. Okay. Yep. Tell me about the features and the benefits of a Danny Mendick.
Per Daryl Van Scoven of the Chicago Sun-Times, Danny Mendick, who has homered in 5 straight games in Charlotte, will be joining the Chicago White Sox in Minnesota. Lenin Sosa will be optioned. This is a TWTW guy. This is a gamer. This is a guy that can wear a mustache if he wants. I think right now he's still dealing with the beard. Kind of maybe he's going to let that mustache fly when he gets back up to the bigs. He can play multiple positions. He could be your player manager. I mean, there's nothing like a middle infielder that can just club home runs in a hitting friendly Charlotte day after day after day. He is the hero we wanted at the beginning of the season, or at least I did. Mm. And now you're going to get Danny Mendick, and we'll see what he can do in Minnesota.
You've got me sold. I'm ready to sign up for.
Can I fit you for a jersey? Can I walk you down to Grandstand and we can get you a custom Danny Mendick jersey?
Why does that have to be custom? They have to sew two jerseys together. Is that what you're saying?
No, of course not. Of course not.
I have been on Atkins lately. I feel great. But listen, I'm happy and excited to see a Danny Mendick on the south side. Obviously, before he had gotten hurt, he was playing really good ball.
He was on a heater, man.
And now then, he's on another heater. It was in the minors, obviously. But
yeah,
hey, bring it up here. It would be nice to at least have some energy, shot in this clubhouse. You know, Danny likes to have a good time. He'll probably feel free to show off his skills and try.
And that's probably was the selling point. It's like, Danny, we want you back up at the big league club. It's a free environment. There's no pressure here. It's an open environment. If you want to bring those five home runs in a row, if you want to bring that up to the big league level, we'd love to have it. No pressure, though.
Let me ask you this question. Will Danny Mendick be leading this team in home runs by the All-Star break?
I don't think there's any question about it. I think it's going to be neck and neck between future player manager Gavin Sheets and and Danny Mendick. Here's the prize, though. If it's Mendick and Sheets, you know, whoever wins that battle to the All-Star break, the rest of the season, they're the player manager. That should be an internal bet.
I like that incentive. But, as I heard this week, which I can't remember who I want to give credit to on this, but the our one all-star will be the milkshake. That will be what represents us at the all-star game is the campfire.
The first time in history that a food was representing a major league ball club.
Yes. Yeah. And coaching first base. I think that's what we do. We just put the milkshake on a table at first, and that's our representation.
So Sosa being sent down couldn't come any sooner, man. That guy had a rough week defensively, couple moments here and there offensively, but boy, he was playing second on Saturday, game two of the Philly series, and a ball, I don't know if you saw this, Pat, I was watching this live and I just couldn't believe it. A ball was hit shallow right field, and Gavin Sheets is out there because we need his bat, right? And we haven't figured out right field, so he's got to be out there. 100% it's Sheets' ball. I mean, the player that's running in, you got the momentum, you see the whole field. Sosa's running backwards. I think he was like an over-the-shoulder catch. I'm assuming Sheets is trying to call him off. Maybe Sosa's trying to do too much, putting pressure on himself. The thing that, Grifol doesn't want around the clubhouse, a no-pressure zone. Trying to do too much, prove himself, and just, crashes into Sheets. Sheets's glove goes flying off, ball drops, and then on Sunday, you've got a rundown situation that the Phillies look like they orchestrated that. I mean, that's a play. Like we used to do that in high school and college, where you'd get far off of the bag, or you try to get caught in a rundown in between first and second when you got a guy on third. If you got an inexperienced infielder that takes the eye off or moves their body. Okay, if they move their shoulders and they turn their shoulders so they're square with first base, you bolt if you're on third, because then that middle infielder has to completely pivot around to square up to home plate to make the throw. Well, they had Lenin Sosa out to dry, and Sosa turns, and of course his shoulders are not square. Wild throw, and then they try to get Harper at second. He's already got the bag. I mean, he had no clue. I mean, that's basic stuff. I mean, that's basic
stuff. To me, that's good scouting, and that's knowing your opponent. It's like, listen, this is one of the worst defensive teams of all time. Let's put pressure on them. Really, it is. I mean, when you think about it, it's like, listen, we can literally steal a really easy run here. We just have to, if we make them have to throw the ball more than two or three times, we're going to score this run. And there's no doubt about it. And that's what happened. I saw it. It's like, guys, if we can't at this point execute the pickle, I mean, what are we doing? I don't care if Lenin Sosa is a young guy up from AAA. These are things that you have to have learned throughout your entire career. It's not like you just started playing baseball yesterday. It's beyond my...
That's the pressure, Pat, that Grifol and Getz talked about in the offseason that we were going to put on other teams. You know, yeah. We were going to force teams into those uncomfortable situations by trying to steal the extra bag, you know, take the extra base. You know, Tyler brought it up here in the chat. He's 100% right. Teams are running all over the Chicago White Sox. The Cincinnati Reds did it. The Philadelphia Phillies were doing it this past weekend. You know, Corey Lee, I need to see way more of Corey Lee. If I could see zero of Martin Maldonado, that would be outstanding. I don't know what they're going to do with Maldonado. He's worthless. Corey Lee breaks up the no-hitter this past weekend. I think he also had a two-run double, perhaps. He drove in some runs. I mean, I want to see more of Corey Lee. What else you got to lose? Martin Maldonado, that did not work.
No, you can put that in the L column if you're talking about free agent signings. So, the future is not bright. There aren't many answers. But you know, you bring up a couple guys in Danny Mendick and a Corey Lee. There, you might as well just kind of settle in and pick out one or two guys that you want to see and root for and hope for. And, you know, some of these young pitchers that have made their debuts this past
week. Yeah, I want to talk to Strini and Cannon whenever you're ready.
So, let's just transition right there, Nick, and let's go into some of the young pitching that we saw.
Now, I liked, Nestrini had his debut outings since the last time we talked, and I believe that was Monday at home. And he looked poised. He looked in command. I really like his breaking stuff, his secondary stuff. You know, he's got that slider. I like the bend on it. He just looked like, you know, and this was against a first-place team. It was the Kansas City Royals. Okay, so no slouch. And I thought he did well for himself. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. That gives you some hope for what's going on with our arms, our young arms. You knew that was going to be, you know, hey, lock in on some younger guys, guys that'll be around beyond this year, because this year is going to be a mess. But what do we have in the pipeline? And Nestrini, good to see that. Now, he pitched on Sunday, to wrap up this Philly series, and he just had no command, you know. Yeah. And I kind of chalk that up to when you get behind in the count and you have to be so careful because the Phillies lineup is dangerous. You are afraid to make a mistake.
Yeah.
You are afraid to attack. You start nipping on the corners and the edges. He looked a little timid, a little scared, even though he had a two-run lead. Eloy Jimenez, the great Eloy Jimenez, who has returned, he crushed a two-run home run. And so he spotted Nestrini that, and he just couldn't find it, man. He just couldn't find the zone. And I think that's really a testament to what kind of lineup. That's what the danger in a lineup causes. We've talked about this, right? It's, you know, you've watched this as Sox fans. If when you have a stacked, you know, what is it, 2, 3, 4, or maybe 1 through 4, or even if it's sprinkled into the bottom of your lineup, there's nowhere to hide. Yeah. You've got guys that absolutely can produce. They can produce under pressure. They can grind out bats, out at bats. And they're dangerous with runners in scoring position. They love those opportunities. You have to be pretty perfect. And as a rookie, a young guy, you know, I'm not gonna beat him up too much. It was a tough lineup, and he didn't have a lot of help defensively.
Well, and I'll look at this too, Nick. You look at his first start. He's starting in front of 15 people plus his family, okay. And then you go on the road, and you've got to play in front of a big crowd on the road, a very hostile environment in Philadelphia, and as you mentioned, a lineup that's got some real. Hitters that can turn around a game in one swing. So it's an all learning experience for him. I think it's great. You know,
it's fine. Good for him to go through
Go through it, fail a little bit, learn from that. You know, it's just like anything, you know, failure is our best teacher. So you kind of take that and go, all right, this is what it feels like now to pitch in the big leagues, to pitch on the road against a really good team. I understand how that feeling is. And this is what I'm going to do the next time I'm in that situation to improve upon it.
Wednesday, was the makeup. So you had a double header on Wednesday, and game one was Jonathan Cannon. And that was, you know, an exciting young arm. A lot of people wondering what Cannon could bring. He throws a million different pitches. He's always got something different. He's working on especially secondary stuff, which, you know, I love keeping hitters off balance. He had that sweeper working, and the sweeper is kind of like, you know, they've given it this name over the last couple of years. You know, this in pitch is the sweeper. I think Lance Lynn was working on it in game maybe last season, and he got all kinds of crushed and messed up because he was trying to figure out a sweeper while he was actually on the mound pitching. But
yeah, I got an idea. Let me work on some new things right now. I haven't talked to anybody about it, but
I'm gonna try it in real time. Usually it's on your side sessions, your bullpen work. You talk about with other pitchers, you know, how they grip, how they throw, what they take off, all that kind of stuff. But the sweeper is kind of like a slurve. It's like a slider curve. It's a little lazy, you know, but you're taking some velocity off, and it's got movement, usually like that diagonal movement. And I saw that from Cannon, which I really like. And he was pitching it with confidence. I mean, five innings, one run, which was not his fault. That was the Fletcher collapse in center field. One walk, three strikeouts, 54 of his 79 pitches were for strikes. So that was kind of an interesting way to start the week in my mind. You got Nastrini positive, Cannon positive, something to look forward to. Crochet had a rough outing when he pitched this past week. I mean, he got figured out by the Phillies in a hurry. I think it was a three-inning stint for him, which is unfortunate, but you know, that's another thing. You're going to ride that roller coaster with Crochet. You know, he came out guns a blazing, white hot. Guys are going to figure you out. There's enough video. There's you know, teams like Philly. You know, it's like, okay, you throw hard. You got a nasty slider, man. When you throw it in a cutter, but we can figure this out. We've seen stuff like this before. So
we've got guys going up to the bump, Nick, that have zero confidence in the team behind them.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So I would imagine most of these guys are thinking, I have to be absolutely perfect and spot on in every pitch because I can't, I don't even want to pitch contact because I don't want the ball to get booted around all over the place.
Yeah.
So I've got to try and take matters into my own hands in the most part. And it's no way, that's no winning formula for any pitcher. I mean, again, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. I've never pitched an inning of at any level of anything in my life, but I can't imagine having, you know, getting up there on that mound in the middle of the field and knowing you've got guys, you know, behind you that are probably not worth being at the major league level.
When you know you've got to be perfect or near perfect, and a lot of it is on your shoulders, and you know, you cannot fall behind, and because you're not trying to pitch to contact, you're trying to strike everybody out. You're just trying to throw your absolute best all the time. That's difficult, man. You want to talk, there's a lot of mental exhaustion. Mm-hmm. There's you got to hopefully have a catcher that you trust, a dugout that you trust, which I don't even know if the Sox are trusting this dugout. And I don't know if you're trusting Maldonado, but you know, as a young pitcher, this is all brand new. Everything's new. And when you see what's going on behind you, to your point, then you start saying, well, I'm going to be the hero. I'm just going to go and blow these guys away, or I'm going to throw my, you know, secondary stuff, and, you know, we won't have any defense issues. And that's not right. I mean, that was something that was highlighted in the offseason where Getz was talking around and found out that players were concerned about the defense. So they, you know, wanted to improve the defense. So free agents found Chicago to be more attractive. Is that happening? Is that happening right now? No. Are players saying, and I get it, I know it's only, you know, April 21st, we're only 20 something games in, but are players that are going to be free agents saying, oh my, cannot wait to talk to Chicago and what they got going on over there? I know they got a lot of money, and boy, I'd really like to get some of it because I love what's happening.
The issue is, we know what the issue is with free agency. The players are wise to what goes on. The players understand the game they have to play in order to sign here. And I don't think players for the most part want to have to go through the BS that they'd have to go through, to sign on the South side. Regardless, listen, I really think in my heart of hearts, most guys are going to go to the highest bidder. They're going to look at the situation. They're going to say, okay, if I can go to team A or team B, team B, I don't have to have all these incentive laden things in my contract to get paid the max dollar that I can get. And maybe, you know, the other places, the places that have state income tax. So I will take a little less, but in long term, I'm bringing home more and I'm putting it in more in my pocket. I'll be happier here. Does that team doesn't have that great a defense? Well, I can overlook that because you know what? I'm going to set myself up financially pretty strong and be with an organization I believe will fix their problems.
They'll continue to spend. Yeah.
Yeah. So listen, you can go on and try and trick yourself into thinking, yeah, players are going to want to come play here because we're strong defensively. I don't think players look at it that way. I don't think most do. I think most look at it like, listen, Mr. Agent, whoever you are, get me the most dollars that you can possibly get from me. That's what I pay you for.
That's why I became an agent. My last name was Agent. That makes sense. No, I agree. You know, that is the old, you know, Ackman's razor philosophy I was preaching about last episode. The simplest answer is usually the truest answer. And when you dangle that much money, that's usually what it comes down to. This is what Chris Getz had to say when he was first hired way back when. I'm honored and humbled to be given this leadership responsibility. I understand what this team means to White Sox fans, and I'm excited to begin the work today and during the remainder of this season. This is a great deal of talent within this clubhouse and within this ballpark, and we are going to diligently begin to do the work and lay the foundation for an organization and a team we all take pride in, from the staff to the players to our fans. You feeling prideful, Pat, to be a White Sox fan? You feeling like you're being listened to, that Getz is really living up to his promises?
I have no pride in this particular version of the Chicago White Sox. I can't say that I do. I talk to people, you know, I still wear my Sox gear. I'm proud enough to, sure, to do that. I'm not that fair weather of a fan. But I get people that have been coming out to me this past week, you know, not just on the street, like walking by, and but people I know, and you'll talk, and I just get,
what about sorries? Like,
I feel sorry. Really, I'm sorry for you. Yeah. I don't know what to say. What else can you say? It's the pity, and it's the shame that you actually feel right now for being a fan of this team, the laughing stock that it has become, and you know, the circus that it's become. Because you know, somebody mentioned AJ Pierzynski in the chat for manager, and AJ is no longer employed as an ambassador of this team because of the disagreements he has. It still shocks me a little bit. Again, my one interaction, when a live interaction with AJ, he would not go down the road of saying anything disparaging about Jerry. Maybe he never will, but there's a reason why AJ isn't part of this ball club anymore, and it's because he voices his opinion. He's got a podcast. He's got a platform, and he's the guy that's going to tell the truth. There's a reason why he's unemployed. There's also a reason why Ozzie Guillen hasn't been asked to come back and manage this ball club, Nick. Because again, another guy that will challenge and question and ask why they don't want that. They don't want mirrors up in that place. There are no mirrors up in that place. They don't want guys that have any kind of opinion that's going to go against what Jerry might want. So that's why he's not here anymore in terms of an ambassador. But it's surprising. It really is surprising. You know, when you've got, you know, ex-players that care about this team and want to make it better or participate in a way that they can help make it better. And they're just asked, no, your opinion isn't valid here. Your opinion that might go against the conventional norm here is not valid. And it just drives me insane.
You hit on a couple things there that I absolutely agree on. This is what Jerry Reinsdorf said about Chris Getz being hired way back when. And it kind of has some parallels to what you just spoke of that we can kind of elaborate on. If I got a guy on the inside who can do the job, why not? Why not do it and save a year? The conclusion I came to is what we owe our fans and ourselves is to not waste any time. That was from the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, when he decided to just kick on Chris Getz up to the GM job. When I dissect that, you know, I think about just how lazy that is. You know, how lazy it is to not do the due diligence, not to at least go out there, even if you think you know what's out there in terms of GM or other, you know, front office positions, to not go out and do a full search of who can I bring in that's the best of the best, you know. And in terms of not wasting people's time, you're wasting people's time because this guy's got to learn on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's inexperienced. You know, he has no business in this position. So you're wasting all of this instead of bringing in an experienced, proven GM that knows the connections, knows how this is done, and can kind of hit the ground running. I'm not saying it was going to turn everything around in an offseason, but you had a lot more confidence in somebody that's got a track record, a resume. Now, to your point of like why AJ's not around, why Ozzie's not in the dugout, which, by the way, if Ozzie's in the dugout right now, this isn't an embarrassment. Okay. We might not be a winning team. That's for sure. Cause the talent's just not there, but this isn't a laughing stock embarrassment. That would never happen with Ozzie Guillen in the dugout. I don't care what you say. That's just, I have belief in that. Ozzie would never let some of this stuff, you know, happen. Anyway, of course, you know, Jerry doesn't want to have anybody around that's going to negate his thinking, tell him what really needs to be going on. These are all the things you need to change. These are the people you need to bring in. This is how you need to double in size your organization. You need to have all these different departments. This is how winning clubs done. No way. He doesn't want to hear any of that kind of stuff. So from the inside, that little family, just move on up to the GM spot.
Well, and the thing is, I wonder if Jerry even realizes, you know, how, and I'm sure he does, I guess, but I mean, how difficult a job is, you know, a president, a VP of baseball operations and general manager that was Kenny and Rick at the time. Those guys, regardless of how you thought that they did the job, they had 20 plus years experience, well, probably 40 years between them, something like that, or even more in those positions. So you can't just assume that a guy, just because he's been around in the organization but never done the job, is at least going to just be able to pick up right where those guys left off. Again, regardless of the way you thought that they managed the ball club, because obviously they had plenty of blunders along the way. But, you know, they were able to, I think, not make this team an embarrassment for most years, except for, you know, when you intentionally tore it all the way down to the studs. And then we knew what we were getting. We knew we were going to get a team that was in tank mode, right? But for the most part, I would say the Sox were most of the time a middling team, right? They're going to be around 500. They're going to have some excitement. They're not going to be just the worst of the worst. They may not win the division this year. Maybe they'll win it in 3 years or 4 years, but they'll win it again eventually, and maybe we'll go to the playoffs one time here or there. But those were under guys that at least had some experience. You can't just assume somebody's going to be able to come in here and be quick on the draw because he's been in the organization running your minor league system. It's really obtuse to think that they could do that.
Greg had a great comment, really hit on our fandom with Seinfeld. We bring the show up quite a bit, and the episode just ran this past week. You know, Comedy Central does like the marathons during the day, and I was watching it, and I've seen it so many times, and it evolves around, of course, George, you know, left, quit his real estate job, and he's kind of talking with Jerry about, well, what other prospects, what else could I possibly do? And George, with zero experience whatsoever, but it kind of parallels with Getz, just says, oh, you know, maybe I could be the general manager of a baseball team. And that's what it sometimes feels like when Chris Getz is the general manager. Was it just, did he just say to Jerry, well, maybe I could be your general manager? And Jerry's like, oh yeah, I can see that. It saves me a lot of time and money, and I could just sell it with, you've been in the organization and I like what you've been doing, even though I don't really probably know. Yeah, sure. That works.
Yeah. Same guy that said that Robin Ventura should be the manager without even wanting the job, having to convince him to come and manage the team again, without any kind of interview process.
Last week, we talked about worst contracts in White Sox history. Mm-hmm. And then I touched on it a little bit with Danny Miller on the Hot Takes and Heater show on the Future Sox podcast. And a couple names were brought up that I kind of forgot last week. So, of course, we're talking about Benintendi, who's just, you know, a mess, an absolute mess. I don't know if he's still battling some sort of hand injury or he's got a new injury or he cannot get it going at all. I mean, this is your guy. This is your $75 million guy. And he takes whatever offensive struggles are going on out defense. I mean, he's had some blunders out there. Man, it is just, it was a bad series. It's been a bad year for Andrew Benintendi. So, I was talking about some of these. Would you classify John Danks? You know, would you say that was a bad extension, a bad contract way back when? He had an injury-plagued year, and they decided to let Mark Burley go, and then they gave Danks that crazy extension. Like, really? You're going to stick with Danks? Okay.
Well, I think the Danks thing takes on a different life because of as you mentioned, the Mark Burley portion of it, because we certainly weren't going to pay two guys, right? So you've got to, it's one or the other. And we're looking at the situation, if you're putting them both on paper, two left-handed pitchers, one is younger, one is older. Let's go with the younger guy. Who again, just coming off a little bit of a heater after the blackout game and the shutout against the Twins in game 162, right? That was shortly after that. It's like, okay, this is the type of guy that we're going to move forward with. And though he's beloved, we're going to let the guy that's had the mileage on him go. When in hindsight, you should have done it the other way, because the guy with the mileage on him had the rubber arm and it was never injured, and he could have pitched for you for a long time. Yeah. And he's, the good guy in the locker room, the guy that people respected and liked and had done more with less than I think anybody I've ever watched play the game, to be honest with you, Nick. I mean, I don't want to call his skill.
Cunning and guile, right? That's what Hawk used to say. Yes. Cunning and guile.
Yes. Change speeds inside, outside, a couple cutters here or there.
Fast. Yeah.
Keep guys off balance and pitch to your defense. And not have to rely on striking so many guys out. So I think the John Danks contract looks bad, one, because he just was never healthy enough to live up to that contract. But two, you decided between two guys and you chose the former over the latter.
Yeah, hindsight 2020 for sure. And Burley went on and did fairly well for the Jays. I think he had an all-star game in him post White Sox. What about Adam Dunn? Is a name that we also tossed around. I mean, I feel like he had like a season, and a half. Is that possible?
Yeah. I mean, so if you look at Adam Dunn, and I can't, to remember what his high watermark was in home runs with the White Sox, I can't remember. But
40, something around 40.
It very well could have been. Now, if you look at that versus today's baseball, if you signed Adam Dunn now you're looking at it differently, because you're not worried about so much with batting average. Back then, when he was signed, people really did put a lot of emphasis on batting average. And when he was batting under 200, I mean, it was like, oh my God, that's all anybody wanted to talk about was the batting mm-hmm. average, the batting average. And the strikeouts, I think he had, I don't know, 200 plus strikeouts the one year. But he did provide something to you in terms of putting the ball over the fence. So, if you're looking at it from the lens of the way we view players today, again, I'm still a guy because I'm old. I'm still a guy that puts a little bit of an emphasis on batting average. I think it still has to be somewhat respectable. I think 250 is about respectable. If you're below that, then I really have a hard time saying you're any kind of productive offensive player, but that's just me. I'm old school. But again, you're looking at it from the lens of when he was signed. Yes, I would say that was kind of like one of the worst contracts in Sox history. If you're looking at it from the lens of now, the emphasis off of batting average and the emphasis not so much on how many strikeouts you have, but how many home runs you're hitting. And he did get on base, I believe, at a fairly high clip. You know, I think it's not one of the worst of the worst.
So I'm looking ahead here to the, to this week, and, you know, Minnesota is on deck, and Minnesota's scuffling. It's a different type of Minnesota. Usually they're, you know, kind of a tough team near the top of the division. And I, you know, maybe things change for them, but, you know, possibly, you know, this is all just, yeah, maybe we could sneak a couple games in. Maybe we could catch somebody off guard. I just, what I've been seeing, and I've been watching, I've maybe missed three or four games live, and I've gone back and like caught up in what I missed. I've been pretty loyal. I don't know how I'm doing it. You know, maybe doctors and scientists can figure that out. You know,
do you want me to have them do that? Should you, God forbid, go before I do? Do you want me to have them study you afterwards and figure out what was going on?
Absolutely.
I can't really tell you then. So that's the downside. I'll know.
There needs to be some sort of scan or something needs to be done. I don't know how this is happening, but, you know, I'm committed. I'm pot committed. We all are as Sox fans. There's so many great folks joining us here live, and that, you know, we'll consume the audio throughout the week, and we absolutely appreciate it. I mean, this is Sox therapy, you know, misery loves company. I don't know. Like I don't, it's kind of like that really apathetic, maybe they'll win a few. It's more of, you know, what kind of performances are you going to get? Is Cannon going to get another opportunity here where he can maybe build on his previous, you know, outing? You know, could Garrett Crochet shake off what happened to him against the Phillies? You know, Paul DeJong, who it was kind of like an offensive spark plug for us until he got hit, I believe, on the elbow. I mean, is he going to be able to bounce back and provide? I mean, guys that I can't believe I'm even thinking about and talking about. You know, what's going to happen with Danny Mendick? You know, how is this guy going to do? I guess I'll be zeroing in on the Mendick experience here this coming week.
I have a feeling you will be.
Yeah. I mean, it's few and far between, Pat. It's, you know, I like you're going back to, you know, having conversations with Sox fans, and I've got folks in the neighborhood, you know, I had family check in on me actually this past week, wondering if I just family. I had family members wondering, you know, if I've started to like burn memorabilia and I'm swearing off this team. And, you know, but see, I knew this was going to be a rough season. I knew this was going to be difficult. I saw it all. You know, I saw the writing on the wall. I drank the Kool-Aid briefly that maybe they built a team that Pedro could actually manage, that whatever they say that they're going to do, win on the margins, play fast, you know, TW, gamers, all that stuff. Maybe they actually do it. They absolutely play the best brand of baseball that they can. Maybe pitching, you know, catches some teams off guard. We can win in the division. And maybe April and May aren't as bad, with the hope that defense is absolutely, you know, it's been completely solidified and we're going to be better for it. Briefly, did I kind of buy into that? And then I took a step back as the season was about to start. I'm like, no, wait a second here. You know, you are what you are. And this is what they were built. But I just, how embarrassing they have been. How inept the offense. You know, of course, the starting pitching that, now Dylan Cease said it, who's obviously now in San Diego, which I'm sure he is having the time of his life. Dylan Cease, you know, I think pitching is going to catch a lot of people off guard. We're going to surprise a lot of people. And you and I like laughed at that. Like, surprise, who are you surprising?
Yeah.
These guys? You're going to surprise people with these guys? Now, Garrett Crochet, you know, his first few starts with a, you know, breath of fresh air. But, you know, he's going to come down to earth. So I'm telling you, man, this Sox team, I think what they absolutely have to do is rattle the cage. And if they're serious at all, even an ounce of seriousness, Grifol's got to go. That's the thing that would excite me the most right now.
It would be something. It would give us more to talk about. You know, I always say at least this team always provides us something to talk about. I would just like to see them do one thing well. Is that so hard?
What's the one thing? What's the one thing?
I don't know. Pick one, you know, run the bases well. can this be the best base running team in all of baseball? Can we focus on one thing to be really good at? Because they fail in most categories, right, Nicky? If you looked at any stats, they're going to be at the bottom of the list on most for most things. Find one thing to be really good at. You know, we've talked a lot. I don't know what they did this weekend. I'm sure they didn't draw a lot of walks again. You know, you're not getting on base. So can you improve in that area? Is there one thing that you can do better in? And just try and be like, we are the best at this. And at least we have something. Again, this team has no identity. This team has no talent. But you have to have some type of identity. You have to say, listen, I remember watching old, when I was a kid, DVDs my dad has. God bless him. He might be listening tonight live and in person. Shout out to Dick Hester if he's listening. You turn on these like old, like they talk about the 19, probably the Bill George era Chicago Bears. And they were terrible. But the opponents would always say, well, you knew when you played the Bears because they hit hard and you played a hell of a game. We'd win, but we knew we play the Bears, right? Just like something to hang your hat on. Like, man, we knew the Sox were just, they're just
not playing. That's a good point. And I thought that might have happened the way they talked and the way they built their team. If we might, you know, we might have more in the loss column just because of talent. But we would fight. We would go down swinging. Like, this is going to be a tough team to put away. All 27 outs were going to be a battle. We are not going to let you off the hook. You are not going to walk through these. And it's just laugher after laugher, you know. And that's where it just comes down to, like, does Getz have meetings with Pedro, like, in the upcoming series of, like, okay, what are we working on? What is the new thing? What's the new strategy? You know, what's the focus here? So I can kind of watch and just to kind of see, are you living up to it?
At some point you do have to put a little bit of pressure on the manager, because you can't have the optional, stretching, optional hitting. You can't have the feel free to show up and feel free to do your job whenever you feel like it type of mentality. You know what rolls downhill, Nick? You've got to have some type of pressure. And sometimes pressure gets guys to perform. Not all of them. Sometimes pressure gets guys to just be worse. But, man, you've got to do something different, and you've got to put some pressure on guys to perform.
I've got a couple Pedro Grifol quotes of the week, Pat, if you can stomach it. You've made it this far. I've been waiting
for this moment for all my life.
You have you've hung in here for the duration, as so many have, and here we are at this pivotal time for our Pedro Grifol. It's now quotes of the week. He says so many off-the-wall stuff. I've got to do at least two per show. This was on the 2-14 start, so it's now 3-18. But this was a few games ago on the 2-14 start. This is what Pedro had to say. I have great confidence in our plan, even though things are not working out right now. I believe in myself and my experiences. I believe in myself as a manager. I know I can do this. Most importantly, my faith keeps me in check. I am at peace every day. It's a very self, you know, fulfilling, just kind of like meditation. I think he has to keep doing that, you know, or else you're going to go insane. I mean, he has to probably talk to himself in the mirror for multiple minutes, if not an hour every day, just reassuring himself.
Well, if anybody needs Jesus, it's Pedro. So let's move on to the next one.
This was, if you watched game one of the doubleheader, there was an issue with why in the world are you not pitch hitting for Martin Maldonado? This is what Grifol had to say. This is game one of the doubleheader this past Wednesday against the Royals. And Grifol not pinch hitting for Maldonado in the seventh with DeJong on second and two outs. No, we were up at the time. I'm not doing that. I'm keeping my catcher in there with the lead. He puts the right fingers down. He knows what he's doing back there. I'm not doing that at that time. But he's completely useless offensively. And I wouldn't even really say he's that useful defensively. So why you're sticking up for him as a veteran, maybe because he's a veteran trying to help him save face. I don't know, but I need to stop seeing Maldonado.
Doesn't most of the time the pitch call come from the dugout anyway? Why are you relying on a guy and saying that the benefit is him putting it on the right fingers?
Yeah,
that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm surprised if it doesn't come from Pedro Grifol, who has a catching background, but it could come from a variety of different places. Sometimes it is from the catcher, but I don't even know if they're using, you know, the old fashioned, you know, one is a fastball, two is a curveball. You know, we got pitch com going on and beeps and zips and zaps and your sweatband of your hat. So I don't know, man. But I love it. He keeps talking and I will keep jotting things down.
Well, it keeps it interesting. So good for him. Happy for him. Keep the faith, I guess, Pedro.
Pat, it is always a pleasure, buddy. I feel a little bit better.
I always feel better talking to you, and I hope the 264 people that are watching us live right now feel better. Thanks to everybody in the chat. You guys have been on fire lately. I wish we had the opportunity to reply and mention everybody that sends in a message. We do.
Awesome.
We try. It's just hard. I can't multitask. I'm an old man, but thank you. Thank you all for listening. And I feel better. I do.
It is it's an absolutely fan fueled podcast. We do this weekly on Sunday nights live on our Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Subscribe, hit the like button. Really, it means a lot. It goes a long way. Pass it along to other Sox fans in your life. Audio available absolutely everywhere. We are on Twitter X at Good Guys TB. We've also got a Facebook fan page. Hey, for Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox!